Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Podcast, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So, Jimmy, let's recap our weeks. How have you been? I know you went to the BTS concert relatively recently. How was that?
Oh, it was life-changing. I love BTS. Okay, so this is my first time seeing BTS in concert. I've seen Jin solo, but I've never seen all seven of them on stage. And I was like in heaven. My favorite member is Jin, so I loved it so much. So each tour stop, they have special songs, which rotates throughout the tour. So it's never the same song back to back. The song I really wanted, they just performed two nights ago. So I was like, they're not going to perform it. But then they did. And I was in heaven. It was so great. I recommend. I feel like if you're a BTS fan, you're probably already going. And if you're not, I hope maybe you should go. Tickets are kind of hard, though, to get still. Yeah, it was so great. The AT&T Center, even though it was still an indoor concert, I'm like, Texas concerts, we got to figure out a way to do Texas summer concerts. The heat, like, you got to figure out a way to get people inside the building fast enough so we're not all standing in the heat for 2 hours. Because that 100-degree weather is, like, killer. But, yes, the BTS concert was amazing. I loved it so much. I want to go again, but I just can't make it work. Traveling out of town would be a little too much for me at this time. But yeah, the BTS concert was amazing. Yeah. And I guess the only other thing I'm doing right now is I'm very obsessed with, I don't know if you heard about the Hello Kitty Godzilla McDonald toy crossover.
I have not.
No, it's like Hello Kitty character. So it's like Hello Kitty and she's dressed up like Godzilla. So it's like they're cosplaying the different Godzilla versus monsters. So there's like Mothra, Mechagodzilla, Ghidorah, Rodan. So it's all those and they're all Happy Meal toys. So I'm trying to collect them all. So I've been obsessed with that. And I just don't want to get any doubles. So that's kind of my week. Not too eventful, but like not jam-packed with lots of stuff. What have you been up to?
You know, I wish I had as exciting of weeks as you do. Like, as of late, my life has been like just nothing but board meetings and taking tests and preparing stuff for work. Like, I can't wait to get to October because I think we have these major work projects that are coming up. They won't be done until maybe mid-October at earliest. And so that's been consuming my life. And then we have some big events coming up that are outside of work that I help organize. So I do some volunteer work and whatnot. So we have a big event coming up in early September. We have a big event coming up in mid-September. So it's just been nothing but just doing all that stuff. I get to have fun every now and again, but it's usually just me unwinding by either playing a video game or something. I did just finish an indie game. For anybody who grew up playing JRPGs in the 90s, you know, Chrono Trigger, games like that, Xenogears, you will absolutely love this game. It's actually made by a super fan. He did what's his name? Matthias Lind, I believe was his name. He made the entire game by himself. Not entirely by himself. He did get help with music and art design, but for the most part, he coded the game by himself and whatnot. It's called Chained Echoes. It is a really good throwback. I wish it got more flowers. Like, it has a cult following. People who are really into retro JRPGs liked it, but it never really got the any kind of big attention. Like, let's say Clair Obscur was able to get, or even Sea of Stars. You know, if you guys are fans of retro 90s JRPGs and you want to play something new, I would recommend Chained Echoes.
Wait, I feel like we haven't talked about Kingdom Hearts 4, at least on the podcast. I mean, we've talked about it here and there, but what do you think? We're going to Cocoa World.
I'm excited. Yeah. So at D23, they made a bunch of announcements. This year is definitely making a lot of people happy because now it looks like Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to happen. For people who aren't familiar with the game series, it is about 25 years old. It is easily one of the top 10 most popular JRPG franchises of all time. easily one of the top-selling gaming franchises of all time. Been around for quite a while. There was roughly somewhere between a 14 and 15-year time gap between the release of Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 3. Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, I want to say, I can't remember if it was 2005 or 2006. I think it initially came out in 5 because, for those of you who don't know, back in those days, games would release in Japan like 6 months earlier before they would release in America. Now they've kind of all aligned and they release roughly around the same time, usually on the exact same day. But back then, so I think the original Japan release of Kingdom Hearts 2 came out in 2005. Kingdom Hearts 4 came out in 2019. So it's been a long running joke in the community that we're going to have to wait another 13, 14, 15 years before we finally get Kingdom Hearts 4. For the 20th year anniversary in 2022, they did a quick, I think like minute long teaser of Kingdom Hearts 4, which kind of let us know, hey, we're working on it. Then just radio silence for 4 years. Like, we heard almost nothing about the development from Square Enix. And then this year, they just kind of turned on the fire hose for us and announced that Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to come out not just on PlayStation. Historically, Square Enix has had exclusive deals with PlayStation to release Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts on PlayStation first, and like after 3-4 years, they're able to release it on other platforms. Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to be out on every major platform in 2027, and then they did a bunch of releases on the information about the game. Not a ton of information, like there's still a lot of stuff we don't know about it, but definitely gave a lot of things that the fans lost their minds over when they announced some of the stuff that was going to happen, and they showed the trailer in D23 the other week. I know I said a lot there, but I think it's important to like point out the fact that historically we have this thing with Square making a long time between the release of 2 and 3, and technically, assuming that they keep their promise and launch it at 2027, which they said they have no plans on delaying it, it'll be close to 9 years between the release of 3 and 4, but yeah, yes, I'm very excited.
I played Kingdom Hearts 1 and I played 2. I didn't play 3. But I love, one of my favorite Pixar movies is Coco. Like, Cars is my favorite Pixar movie, but I love Coco. So seeing that in the trailer, like, and then the Coco, like the Keyblade, I'm a sucker for the Keyblades. I wish if Disney made like life-size Keyblades for all of them, my whole wall would just be the Keyblades. I love how they like all the designs for them when they go to the different worlds. I feel like if I get my 3D printer up and going again, I might start printing out some Keyblades. I'm so excited for it. I think I need to play through all of them again. Just start, because I believe they're all on PC, right? I think you can get them on Steam.
Yeah.
I think it's
They're re-releasing them. I believe they're re-releasing them this year or next year, early next year, something like that. I'd have to double look it up again. But I believe that, I know they're re-releasing them all on Nintendo Switch 2, but I think they're re-releasing them all, get a bundle or something like that next year so that people can catch up and play them all before 4 comes out.
Can you imagine? I don't have a Switch 2 yet. I've been holding out because I want to special edition Switch. I thought we would get a special edition Pokemon Switch eventually, so I'm holding out for that. But can you imagine if we got a special edition Kingdom Hearts Switch?
That would be pretty cool. I wouldn't be surprised if we did.
I might have to like bend the rule of only Pokemon Switches or like Pokemon Nintendo systems and have to get that. I feel like it would look really cool. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Side note on your, off of your JRPG thing, but yes. I wish we were at D23 this year. I wish I could have made it work, but I was at the concert.
Yeah, and I just couldn't make it out either. We did go 2 years ago, which was fun. I don't know if I'd say not as fun, but it was definitely fun. I kind of wish we were there to see the X-Men announcement. They pretty much just announced the cast. I guess from the cast, you can kind of ascertain what the plot's going to be about, but I don't know that that's actually going to be the full cast. I imagine they're going to announce a few other characters. Like, one thing I noticed that I think pretty much everybody else noticed is they have not announced Magneto, though they have announced Professor X. But they also announced a Mr. Sinister, which makes me think that Mr. Sinister is going to be the primary villain and maybe Magneto's not really going to have any place in the story.
But the thing is, like, Mr. Sinister, you can't do much. You know what I mean? Like, he never was that much of a character. He's there just to bother Jean Grey and Cyclops. He's like, I want your DNA. And then that's kind of it. Unless they, like, juice up the role. I mean, you don't hire Adam Driver, right? If you're not going to, like, keep him around for a while.
Right. I don't know if it's just me, but it just seems weird to do Mr. Sinister without Apocalypse, since Apocalypse like plays a pretty decent role in Mr. Sinister becoming Mr. Sinister. So I don't know how that's going to play out.
And then it feels like it's too early to bring Apocalypse in. And I feel like we just did it. Like, I know that, like, what was it called? Was it called X-Men Age of Apocalypse? No, it was called.
Oh, it's just X-Men Apocalypse.
I know that was a while back, but it feels like it was just yesterday.
Yeah. Well, and also in the most recent X-Men 97 season, which just ended like 2 weeks ago, I think, the main villain was Apocalypse, so it would seem a little fresh. But I guess we'll wait and see. I mean, you know, it's not until summer 2028, so I imagine there's going to be a lot of announcements around that between now and then.
Yeah, I wonder if they're weighing on Magneto because they're trying to figure out how to do Magneto. Like, you can't do Magneto without the Holocaust, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the actor who they cast for Professor X, but he's like in his 40s. And I guess they can age him up if they wanted to with makeup or CGI or whatever. But basically, Magneto and Professor X are roughly the same age. You know, maybe there's some age difference, but it's not like, you know, there's a 30-year age difference between them. At most, maybe 10. It's not likely that a man who's like in his 40s or 50s in the 2020s is going to have survived the Holocaust. Like, it's just not possible unless some time traveling shenanigans happen. Like, I don't know, maybe he was frozen like Captain America or something like that.
Yeah. And I feel like you have to do it. Like, that's so integral to Magneto's story.
Well, one argument I have heard is that it's not necessarily the Holocaust that is important to his story as much as a genocide is important to his story, because his whole story is that he survived the Holocaust, which was a genocide, and seeing what humans are capable of and how willing they are to kill off an entire group of people is what kind of inspires him, for lack of a better term, to be the villain that he is, because he's like, yeah, humans did this to Jews, they will do this to mutants too. And so you could attach him to a genocide that is more current, and that might work.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, maybe they'll just make one up.
Yeah, maybe.
So, but that would have been exciting to see the, and then they did the Visions trailer or Vision Quest's trailer. Mm-hmm. And that looks good to me. So we'll see. But yeah, I do want to go next D23. I want to be there.
Yeah. Next time, if time permits, I definitely want to be there too, because I think there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff that they'll announce, especially because it'll be post Secret Wars, because they do D23 every other year. So it'll be after Secret Wars. There's probably going to be a ton of Marvel stuff announced, a ton of Star Wars stuff. But yeah, since we are on the topic of cons and whatnot, let's jump straight into this episode, because it is, the A plot is all about cons. You know, it was funny watching this episode before we jump in, because it takes place at the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center, which is a real convention center in Dallas. And we've actually been to a comic convention, not once, but twice at that very convention center, the Fan Expo in Dallas.
Yes. And you met Stan Lee at one of them.
Yes, I did.
Do you still have that picture?
Yeah, I still have that picture. I still have the autographed book, all that stuff.
Nice. You know what? I must have glossed over that it was at the K. Bailey Hutchins Convention Center.
Yeah.
It looks different in the show than it does in real life.
Yeah. When they were scanning over that scene, I noticed that it said K. Bailey Hutchinson. And a lot of times they'll make up the name of a place just for the sake of a show. But I was like, no, she was an actual politician. Maybe there is a real convention center named after her. And I Googled it and I saw, oh, you know what? That looks very familiar. And then I looked up Fan Expo and I was like, yeah, Fan Expo takes place in that very convention center. So the Dallas Fan Expo, to be more specific. So I was like, oh, you know what? We've probably been on that exact sidewalk eating at a food truck at Fan Expo.
Yeah, I was, now that you mentioned, I'm like trying to think of like all the places that there were during that expo. But That's cool. Now, when I go back, I'll think of this. If we ever go back, we can recreate scenes from this episode.
Yes, we'll do that. But let's jump right into the episode for season 15, episode 4, Hank Encounters of the Nerd Kind, which is a reference to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a very famous sci-fi alien movie by Steven Spielberg. You could probably find it on a streaming platform. I don't know where, but it's got to be somewhere. It is a classic, so I recommend watching it. The episode starts in the alley, and Bobby is trying to drive a food truck down the alley, and all the guys are in the alley and kind of criticizing him for being a bad driver, leaving Bobby to ask Hank for help because, you know, Hank, he's driven bobtails and stuff like that. Of course, he's going to be able to pull it off. You've worked in the food truck before. Is it? I imagine it's hard to drive. Have you ever driven one?
I've driven it. I've never had to be in that tight of a quarter, though, with it. But I have driven it. It's kind of... I guess it's just like thinking of driving like a really big van. And then the mirrors, like, I don't know if anyone's ever drawn like a U-Haul or whatnot, but like the mirrors are bigger and then you can see a wider angle from them. So it's kind of like that. Every time I've seen this, I've watched this episode like a couple of times. How did Bobby get in there? Like, did the truck start there? The truck couldn't have started in the alley.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like, why would the truck be there if it was like, because aren't they in Dallas? Dallas-Fort Worth? Bobby, is it Robotichan in Dallas?
Yeah, it is in Dallas, but he's got it in Arlington. I don't know, maybe it was... I mean, I guess for the episode to happen, he has to be in Arlington, but...
I know, the logic, I'm trying to...
In-universe, maybe it was cheaper to rent it in Arlington, because he does mention that he doesn't own it. He rented the food truck.
Yeah, so maybe they dropped it... Why would they drop off the food? I don't know. There are so many questions I have of how it ended up in the alley or like in Hank's driveway. But I mean, I think I could have gotten it out, but it would have taken me a while. You know, like when you're slowly pivoting out of a tight spot. So I don't know, but I definitely, working on a food truck was one of my favorite experience, worst pay experience.
Fair enough. Bobby asks Hank for help because, you know, Hank has experience driving things like that. And I love how Dale's like, oh, don't help him. He needs to learn to be a man. And then immediately Dale chokes on some of his beer and he begs Hank for help, which is very much a Dale thing. Bobby mentions that he rented this food truck for the Dallas Sci-Fi Convention. You know, Hank's like, what's that? And Dale says, you know, it means the Dallas Science Fiction Convention. And it's an excuse for twig boys to wear anatomically incorrect alien outfits, which is exactly something Dale would say. Bobby wanted the food truck, you know, because it's a good way to make money. You know, this, I guess, is supposed to be not necessarily a mimicking San Diego Comic-Con, but maybe mimicking Fan Expo, since Fan Expo Dallas is a real thing that has happened at that exact convention center. And that brings in several thousand people. And, you know, they do serve food there, but it's very overpriced. And the food trucks parked outside are slightly less overpriced and better quality at the very least. So, you know, that's a good way to make some good money. Park your food truck out there. You get a bunch of hungry people midday. So it makes sense that Bobby wants to do this. And so Emilio's managing the actual restaurant for that weekend while Bobby goes to the convention. And he said he spent a lot on the food truck. And then he also got an all-access pass so that he could, you know, be a vendor there and go inside and all that stuff. And he asks Hank for help because, you know, Hank is bored. He's retired and, you know, he's his father. He'll help. And Hank agrees. And so he goes up there. And I love how Bill asks him for, you know, if you're at the convention, you see any of those hentai DVDs, bring me back some. Which one, this is supposed to be taking place in the 2020s, so why isn't he asking for Blu-rays? But that's beside the point. Bobby makes the comment that I probably would have made. It's like, you know, internet exists, right? But he's like, yeah, but it only has so much. But that is such a Bill thing to say.
How much does Bill need?
I don't know.
Is that shocking to you, though? Like, I don't know. Is that shocking that Bill... I feel like this is like, we are in Gen 2 of King of the Hill. Like, I don't think they would have made that joke back in the day.
No, I mean, there was the whole episode, Hank's Dirty Laundry, that has to deal with the porn and cuffs and collars and stuff like that. But yeah, it was never... except for that episode, it wasn't in your face. And even then, Bill was like, we find out that the porn that Hank was loaned to find the answer to beat his court case was from Bill. So, and it makes sense that Bill would do that. He's made other comments as well, but the fact that he was so open to give Bobby some money and ask him for hentai DVDs definitely seemed out of character for that Bill. Like, I feel like that Bill would have, if he did, he wouldn't have done it so out in the open, like in the original King of the Hill run.
Yeah, definitely. I guess the shocking thing was that, like, the internet only has so much or something, like, there's only so much the internet can hold.
Yeah.
That was the insane part to me. That was a great joke, though. I mean, like, kudos to whoever wrote that joke. It was really funny.
Yes, that was great. On to the B plot. And I'm not a big fan of the B plot, but it's fine. It's, like, not terrible. It's just the A plot's so much better. The B plot has Peggy going through her musings. And she's in the garage and literally has banker boxes full of old newspapers that have her music. Like, not even just newspaper clippings of her musings, because her musing was just one column. Like, the whole newspaper. And I don't know why, like, as somebody who tries to, you know, minimize how much she stores, it just does not make sense that she keeps that. But I guess it does sound like a Peggy thing, so that she can have, like, all of the details about her musings on there. But she's going through that, and Min walks into the garage asking her what she's doing. Peggy is going to be taking a poetry class at the community college, and it is run by Marina, who is, I guess, like, this known greeting card lady who writes a lot of the greeting cards. And Min's like, she's the one who sells the greeting cards. One of them was the one that I gave Khan for the divorce. And I could hear him crying all the way in the alley when he was reading it. And it's kind of funny, because the reason she was in the garage in the first place was because she was looking for a slow cooker because Khan got hers in the divorce. She says something to the effect of, I bet he's throwing a bunch of soup parties now, which, put a pin in that. We'll come back to that a little later. It's not the best B plot, but it is kind of funny.
I mean, I feel like when there's just such a strong A plot that, like, I don't know what B plot could have, like, held its own with this A plot.
Yeah.
But, like, Min being, like, he's throwing soup parties, I don't know, like, that would have never, with a slow cooker, it would have been, oh, man,
yeah.
Though a soup party does sound fun. You know, a chili party would be great, though. But I love that that's where Min's mind went first off.
Mm-hmm. Also, that she didn't just buy another slow cooker. They're not that expensive. And if you're going to use them a lot, it's definitely worth it.
Do you think it's the principle of it? Like, he took the slow cooker. Like, maybe she's plotting to get it back.
Oh, maybe. That could be a plot for hers. I could see her wanting to do that.
I think that would be a funny thing, though. Like, maybe the last episode of the season, and you just see Min making, like, soup in a slow cooker.
Yeah. We go back to the convention, and Bobby points out they're not in a great spot. Hank kind of agrees, and we kind of see that there's, like, a bunch of food trucks along the sidewalk, and they really aren't that close to the entrance. You know, people have to walk by a bunch of other food trucks before they get to them, and they almost certainly would have chosen something else before they ever hit the robotic chain one, so it's not the greatest thing. Hank's also just not kind of having it, because he just doesn't get the comic book convention thing. Everybody all dressed up, so he's like, so this is once a year, right? Just like Halloween. And he's like, Bobby's like, no, Dad, con season is year-round. And then Bobby goes into the food truck and comes out in a costume. And Hank's like, you look like Cher. He's just not into any of this stuff. He thinks all of this stuff is dumb, which is exactly what I would be expecting from Hank.
I thought that was pretty funny. And I mean, like, after he said, I was like, man, Bobby, you do look like Cher a little bit. I think it's the straight black wig he was wearing and the eyeliner. But I thought the quick chain was really funny, like him just going in and then out as in the costume. And then I forgot what he said his name was, but he was like, I am this character.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because King of the Hill is technically owned by Disney now, and Disney owns Star Wars and a lot of properties. So from a pure legal perspective, I imagine they could get away with talking about Star Wars and stuff like that. But no, they just... made up their entire universe, this fake universe of like, I guess, Star Trek, Star Wars adjacent type TV show and characters and that. So, and I doubt that we're ever going to hear about these characters ever again.
I mean, I don't know. I guess something later in the episode makes me want like more of this.
Agreed. But yeah, the funny thing that I think here is that Hank's being Hank, like he's, you know, the older generation just doesn't understand why people dress up. And it's honestly, it's not just Hank. There are people our age who are the exact same way, and probably people younger than us, because we're not exactly young anymore, sadly. But we're not old either.
That is true. I know.
So, but you know, I think there's even younger people, though I feel like, and I've talked to this with some friends before. I feel like maybe Gen Z and Gen A are a little more forgiving of nerddom than like our generation and older generations, where, you know, if you were really into video games in high school, everybody thought you were a nerd and a geek. And that might still be true today. But I think, you know, a lot of the stuff is more socially acceptable. Like, even I've talked to some people who've, like, done, like, Comic-Con is not a new thing. It's not like it only came up 10 years ago. It's been around for quite a long time. And when you talk to some old people who remember the old days of Comic-Con, they're like, yeah, it was truly just like a nerd con where it was just like comic book geeks and stuff. Ever since the MCU and stuff, and they're getting, you know, A-list actors and Oscar winners and stuff, and, you know, all these TV shows are becoming popular, like Walking Dead and American Horror Story. And yeah, it's still very much a geeky con, but like nerddom isn't really seen in as much of a negative light now as it was when we were growing up, or even older times. So I don't know. Like, but Hank is definitely of that generation where like those were the people. If those people were in high school with him, they were getting swirlies. Here we jump back into Peggy's B plot, and we see that Peggy's going to the community college and she sees Min, and Min decides, you know, she wants to join the class because it gives her something to do, and maybe it'll give her a place to direct her rage that she has at Khan. And she thinks to herself, you know, if a hillbilly can write poetry, anybody could do that. And I love how the person comes in, the teacher comes in, and she reads a poem, and then there's claps, and Peggy is like, oh, I'm sorry, but I thought for poetry you were supposed to snap for applause, which is, you know, a Peggy thing she would do, where she wants to be the one who is right. We jump back to the convention. Bobby comes out, and he's like, do Zalamarians even like yakitori schnitzel? Because, again, not enough people are coming by. And Hank, you know, points out, hey, maybe we can do some, you know, footwork or something, because we are pretty far away from the entrance. And Bobby asks Hank to go pass out flyers because he's like, well, you're the best propane salesman out there. It would make sense. And Hank's like, yeah, I once sold propane to a guy with an earring in his nose, which is a very Hank thing to say because guys' nose rings like barbecue too. So not that big of a deal, but that would be an absolute thing Hank would say. So Hank has given a bunch of flyers, you know, robotic chain information, and he's given also the professional access pass that Bobby is holding on to. He asks, you know, Hank to go in and pass along some of the flyers. Hank is like, if I come back with a laser sword, you can tell your mom that I would respect her wishes if she wanted a divorce. I love that line. It's just, it sounds like a Hank line. Hank comes across a woman with four boobs, but also four eyes, and it throws off Hank, because not necessarily in the sense that he was looking at her chest, but just the nature of the costume. But she's like, hey, my eyes are up here. And Hank tries to do a sales pitch for robotic chain. She takes the flyer, but then all four of her eyes roll. And so Hank's like, how did she do that? Then we see a guy walking around dressed as a fly. And it winds up being Dale. And basically his thought is, what better place for an alien to hang out than at a sci-fi convention? And so he starts like collecting hair from people so that he could DNA test. A lot of stuff's happening. I love that Dale is there.
I love when Bobby hands Hank the flyers and he's like, and you can wear this shirt. And I forgot what the shirt said, but it was like to the thing of like Greedo shot first or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hank's like, I will not wear that shirt. And then I think if you've never been to a con before, seeing cosplay in person is very, like, crazy. like some of the outfits and just like, especially if you're not familiar with the properties and whatnot, I can understand where Hank's coming from. Like, Hank is also a very like conservative person. To like see that much cleavage in just a while, that must have been insane for him. So I kind of give him a little pass. I love the four eyes rolling though. That was funny. It took me a while to catch that. I don't think I caught it my first thing. And so I was always like, what was Hank saying? Like, how'd she do that? I thought it was about the boobs, but I guess it was about the eyes rolling. And then do you think Dale convinced himself to go in the alley? Remember when he was talking about like the convention is for aliens, like so they don't have to be in disguise. Do you think as he was saying that, his mind was like, oh, I should go.
Yeah, I think that's how it happened. Like, I think that's exactly how it happened.
And then like, he's like, yeah, I've been collecting DNA and they don't even notice. And then he cuts that guy's hair and he's like, hey, what are you doing? That guy's like,
yeah. Dale's just like, I'm a bug. Don't pay attention to me. Buzz, yeah. Buzz.
Oh, man. That convention does look fun. But, well, it's a sci-fi convention, but it feels predominantly that one property, though.
Yeah. Whatever that property is called, I couldn't pick up on what it was. It does seem like it's supposed to be like a Star Wars type thing, even with that shirt where it talks about the other person shot first. Like, that is specifically a Star Wars quote.
Yeah, everyone I've seen in the at the convention, so like everyone looks like they're from that show. So I was like, oh, why didn't they just make it that show's convention?
I don't know. Maybe that's because it's like that's the most popular thing, maybe. Like, maybe that's because it's like most popular show right now, like in that universe. That's why they go in.
Maybe. I do like it. I'm very intrigued about it. I guess I'll talk about it more after a certain scene happens.
I also like the one throwaway line Hank has where he sees the two people fighting with the laser swords. I know lightsabers, but, you know, whatever. and Hank asks one of the guys, like, are they making this up as they go? I think he actually asks Dale. It's like, are they making this up as they go, or is the outcome predetermined, like wrestling or the NFC championship?
That was a great lie. I laughed. Man, was he talking to? I don't know, but Dale comes shortly after that, if anything. And you do see that at cons, though. You know what I mean? Like, you see people like reenacting scenes and whatnot. So I felt right at home watching this episode.
Yes, indeed. So back to the B plot, Min is reading her poems and they are just pure rage and darkness. And the professor points that out. And then Peggy's are very light and boring. When they start bickering at each other, the teacher points out that they should work together. Like, you know, Peggy's lightheartedness and Min's darkness could balance each other out to make an amazing poem. I like how Peggy's like, oh, I'm more of a solo act. And Min's like, I'm more of a Peggy sucks act. But they ultimately agree to work together.
Peggy's things are barely like poems or whatnot. They're just like, I don't know. They're not even like greeting card sayings. They're just weird.
They are not. They're like musings, but like crappier musings.
I think it's because like it's like when she starts, it's going in one direction. And then like the end is like totally out of left field.
It's just so boring. Like if somebody said like, hey, you want to read this book of poetry? And it was just nothing but Peggy's poems. I'd be like, why did you give me this?
I feel like it's that thing where you read it ironically.
What about these poems made you think I would want to read this book? Just curious.
Oh, that says a lot about you, right? Or what people think of you.
Exactly. Back at the con, Hank is still, you know, trying to market stuff. And he runs into a guy who is wearing what looks like, you know, a security outfit, maybe event security. Hank's like, oh, finally a normal looking guy. And then he kind of, you know, is being kind of insulting about how he's running into all these. I don't think he actually uses terms like losers or whatnot, but he might as well with the way he is describing them. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm just a normal guy. Hank's like, oh, okay, I need to get into Hall F when he shows his all access pass and stuff. And the guy's like, oh, you can't get in with that pass. You need a diamond pass. And Hank's like, dang it, I need to get into Hall F. So the guy's like, oh, don't worry, I'll go ahead and take care of this for you. And Hank's really trusting and it's like, oh, okay, sure, and gives it to him. As the guy walks away, he puts on his like alien mask that kind of looks like a squid. And he uses the badge to get in. And Hank realizes what is happening. So he runs in and the security guy stops and Hank's like, oh, the guy who looks like Wood with the mall cop outfit, he stole my pass. And then the guy points to the sign that says pass is required. And Hank's like angry, which I think this is kind of the real friction point of the episode, or where things start, is because like Hank sees a guy who looks normal, who is clearly a fan and is insulted by what Hank's saying. But the guy decides to like run with it so that he can get the pass.
I feel like there is no justification of stealing someone's badge. But I mean, I can understand Hank being kind of looking down. I feel like I kind of had the same experience when I took my dad to his first Comic-Con. Like, he didn't really understand, like, the culture of it all and the fandom and just being, like, to experience it all. I think you go to your first Comic-Con, you're like, okay, I'm seeing, I'm testing it out, I'm, like, figuring out what's going on. And then you really, like, you get into it and you start embracing it. Then you understand, like, for anyone who's cosplayed, you once you put on a costume and you go onto the floor, it is an experience. And I think, like, some people don't get that right away. So I understand where Hank's coming from. A little misguided as it is, but I understand where it's coming from.
I mean, I could agree with that. It is a different experience if you've never done that before, but still.
I also was thinking, though, like, it was, I think it's another thing where, like, Hank's not used to seeing people wear, like, their passion just right on them. You know, like, where, like, they're very adamant about what they're passionate about, and there's no apologies of it at all. They're like, here I am, this is what I love. And I think sometimes when Hank sees that kind of stuff, he gets a little, like, scared of it in a way, you know?
Actually, not to give anything away, but I'll go deeper into it later. But I disagree with that statement, and we will go into it a little later because it comes up later. So back at the B plot, Min is with Peggy, and she doesn't really want to work with Peggy, but Peggy's insistent because I think she realizes this is the best chance of getting ahead. As Peggy is saying her poem and it's, you know, boring and whatnot, Min sees Khan walking in the alley. And so that makes her, you know, inspires her to say something very dark. And it actually makes the poem work out. Back at the A plot, Hank comes back and points out that the pass was stolen. Bobby is furious about it because the pass was $300 and Hank can't believe it. It's like $300 and none of these people can afford deodorant?
That's true. That is a true statement.
Hank is like, oh, I'll take full responsibility of this. I'll go figure it out. And Bobby's kind of in this mindset of, you know, you've done enough. I'll go and talk to them because, you know, he speaks their language. He knows nerddom and stuff like that. So back at the B plot, Min and Peggy are in their class and they give their poem, and you can see kind of the conflict, but how it works, because Peggy's sight is very light and then it ends on a dark Min quote. But the teacher absolutely loves it. Peggy takes like the majority of the credit because of course she does. She's Peggy. And while they're sitting down, Min is hit on by a guy. So, and Min's enjoying it. I mean, it makes sense. She's recently divorced, somewhat recently divorced. I guess she's recently divorced in the sense that she's public about it. But as we learned in the prior season, they had already been divorced for 2 years, but they kept it secret. Back at the convention, Bobby asked for help from the event staff. And he kind of goes into character talking about how, you know, the guy was dressed as this character and he stole something and it's against the code and whatnot. But of course, Hank's not having any. He's like, yeah, and it's also against the law of the state of Texas. And Bobby's like, you're not helping, Dad. And so when Bobby starts, you know, talking, all of a sudden the guy gets a character too. He's like, yes, I will help you fix this misdeed. And so the event staff is helpful because Bobby is able to talk to him on his level. Though I feel like in real life, because like a lot of the event staff or a lot of the security is actually hired by the convention center. Isn't that true? So like, would he have been more interested in like, oh, a guy stole your badge versus caring about the characters and the lore and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, this must be a very popular franchise, I assume, in this world. That's kind of how I feel about that franchise. But back to like the Peggy Minton thing, I just gotta say, I don't know if the musings are any better. They still take a wild turn at the end, but I think it's because it's like Min's anger. It just is like funny now.
Yeah. Well, it's because basically Peggy will start like the first half of the poem and then Min will end it. And so Peggy will do the lighthearted thing and then Min will do the dark ending. And it just works. It's not the best poem you'll ever hear, but it actually works.
I like it because it's just like the heart. I don't know. I guess, yeah, you're right. It's just Min's anger works for it. But I wonder, oh, well, yeah. Yeah, when she wrote her own poem, it wasn't that good. It was too dark.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the Min and Peggy's poetry, right? I still think it's wonky, but, you know, it's getting there. And I'm glad that they're getting the praise. Peggy's getting the praise that she always wanted.
Yeah.
But she's published, though. You know what I mean? Those were published, right? In the Harlan, like, her musings were already published.
That's, I mean, yeah. Because, like, she literally, at the beginning of the episode, had banker's boxes full of newspapers with her musings in them.
So I'm like, you already hit published level, Peggy. Like, why do you want to be in, what is the magazine called? Whispers or something like that?
Yeah, it was Whispers. And I guess it's, like, a Texas magazine, which I actually wrote this down. I forgot to mention this. She has a quote about the golden beaches of Corpus Christi and the dusty plains of El Paso.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like how people say from sea to shining sea or whatever, but she's trying to talk about Texas wide, which is kind of funny because I don't know how much time you spent in Corpus, but I don't think anybody in their right mind, unless that's the only beach you've ever seen, like not even just in real life, but like on TV and whatnot too, is a Corpus beach. Would you describe a Corpus beach as being golden?
I mean, golden with trash, maybe. Corpus like, Beach is not... I feel like even on the good days, Corpus Beach is, like, muggy. Like, it's never, like, picturesque.
The water's shiny not because of gold or it's clean. It's because of the oil slick in it.
Yeah. Man, I have not been to Corpus in a long time.
You're not missing anything.
Nope, probably not. But yeah, the Peggy and Min thing. I was just like, Peggy, you're already public. Like, is Whispers that important to you, Peggy?
I mean, I think any kind of thing she can get credit for, even if it's like a magazine that has a circulation of 1,000 people, she would still take it as a win. Like 1,000 people in a state of, you know, what, 22 million or something like that. I forget the exact number Texas has. Maybe it's closer to 30, but yeah, she would still consider that a major win. Like if 5 people read her poem in that book, it would be a win to her just because she got published in a book.
Oh, I guess so. Because the Harlan paper's just citywide. This would be at least statewide.
So back at Peggy's house, they're working on the poem, but Min is just more interested in flirting. So she is flirting on her phone with the guy and, you know, Min's just enjoying it and is super happy. I like how she's like, oh, look, he said he was happy and he sent an emoji of a rocket ship. Forgot how funny men were. It's just so funny because she is so happy. And now she's starting to tell poems, but they are no longer dark at all. And Peggy is worried about that because she's like, oh, if I don't have dark men, nobody is going to want to listen to our poems and it's not going to get published. But Min's like, you know, you want me to express my emotions. My emotions are happy right now. So that's how I feel. And so Min bounces to get ready for her date. She's going to, I guess, the Capitol Grill or something. I forget what it was called, but it was something like the Capitol Grill. And so Peggy, you know, starts to think about what, you know, what can she do to fix this? And she has an idea. She goes over to Bill's. And they're in the garage, and lo and behold, they're having a soup party. So apparently that's just something. And it's not even just Con and Bill. It's Con, Bill, Dale, and Boomhauer all having the soup party. And they're all like, yeah, this is a great soup party. And so Peggy uses the opportunity to spill that that Min is on a date with a new guy.
Do you think Min and Con have soup parties? Like, was that, because she went directly to soup party and now Con's like, is that a thing that they just hosted, the soup parties? And what is making it a party? What, like, is it, I don't know, what defines a party?
I guess if it's more than just 2 people, it's technically a party. Like a dinner party doesn't necessarily have to have 20 people.
I felt like when she said soup party, I was expecting like some kind of like celebration of soup, maybe, or like a soup potlucky situation. This just felt like I made, and it, I'm sorry, Con, but it looked like just a tomato soup straight. There was no anything else in it, which sometimes I'm confused because Bill is like a really good cook, right? Or is it just barbecue?
No, he's cooked a lot of good stuff. I mean, barbecue for sure, but he's cooked a lot of good stuff before.
Yeah, so I was like, man, this is not going to cut it for Bill. Like, I mean, again, though, Bill will eat anything. We're like, what was that episode where they were following him around because they were, like, investing in all the stocks for everything Bill would buy? And it was just, like, weird stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do believe that Khan and Min have had soup parties in the past. And that's why that was her go-to thing with it. The other thing is, though, I feel for Min. Like, I feel like I can understand, like, how excited she is for it. For, like, being, like, flirting and, like, going out with another person. Because think about, like, she moved on from Khan, but she couldn't, like, start moving on, like, dating and whatnot, because they were, like, faking their marriage together still. So she's probably been, like, super ready to, like, go out on a date and just to kind of live a life again.
I agree. Yeah, she just wants to. I mean, I think that's the hardest part about breaking up, because while there are some people who are just like, I'm done with relationships for whatever reason, everybody has their own reasons. Most people, they want to get back on that horse. You know, they crave being in a romantic relationship. And once they've properly healed, as you will, they will want to get back into it. And she's finally, what, this has to be at least 2 or 3 years after the divorce. So she finally has a chance to get out and meet people. Then we get back to the convention. And Hank and Bobby are walking around with the security guy. And, you know, the security guy is kind of indicating that they've scoped the whole area. They haven't found the guy. So I don't know what we're going to do to get them. But then Hank realizes who the guy is and sees him buying something at one of the booths. And so they approach him. Bobby gets into character to talk to him because Hank, you know, Hank being Hank's like, oh, I'm going to go kick his ass. But Bobby's like, let me handle this. Bobby's like, oh, I come to you in peace and according to this guideline and whatnot, kind of in character for this in-universe thing. But the guy won't give it back because, you know, he's basically like, Hank doesn't appreciate this. A lot of people would spend a lot of money to go to this event. True fans. And he has a pass and he doesn't even want to be here. Thinks we're all freaks and weirdos. And Hank's like, hey, I never said that out loud.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't say that loud enough for you to hear.
Yeah, which is funny because he's kind of admitting that he thought that. And then the guy's like, why don't you go back to your tractor convention? And he's like, first of all, it is a show. And second, it is in the fall. And so Hank starts insulting them for being nerdy. It's like, he says all of the kind of cliche things about, you know, oh, you guys need to grow up and make your parents proud and stuff like that. And then the guy's like, I'm with my family. And then he's like, yeah, well, it's a Friday. It's a school day. They should be back in school. Don't you want them to have a chance to be normal? And obviously, this is really alienating, excuse the pun, for everybody. And it's ultimately going to hurt Bobby's business because they know Hank's associated with Robotic Chain. And all the guys start shaming him. And so Bobby just asks for them to leave.
I love, like, oh, man. Hank just dug himself into, like, oh, a giant hole. Hank doesn't see it as him making fun of him, of everyone, you know? It's just like he's pointing stuff out. I always felt bad for, like, because he's talking to the guy. And then there's, like, this girl standing in the sides. And he's like, is that a picture of an alien's private parts? And then she's, like, holding this, like, piece of artwork. And then she gets ashamed of it. First of all, okay, if we have a picture of an alien private part, we need to put that in a bag, right? Like, you can't just be holding it out like that. Okay, that's my first thing. But then I was like, man, this girl's just catching strays. She's just standing there, Hank. Why are you attacking her? She didn't steal your pass. I just felt bad for her. She's just like, I'm just standing. She might have wanted to just cross over, but they're having an argument, so she doesn't want to walk in between them. And Hank's just like, what's that girl holding?
Because Hank just doesn't get it. He thinks this is all nerdy, and the only type of people who do this are like complete social outcasts. But then, like, of course, you see that one guy. He has a wife. He has kids. And, you know, you've been to a lot of conventions. You've been to way more than I have. I think I've only been to 5 or 6 in my lifetime. But, like, yeah, I'm sure you get the basement dweller stereotypical nerd out there. Actually, probably not, because the basement dweller literally doesn't leave their basement. You get a lot of people who are gainfully employed, married, in relationships, even people who are, like, in incredibly professional fields. I'm guessing a lot of them probably lean in STEM direction, but, you know, other fields too. So it's not like it's just these low social outcasts. It covers a large group of people.
That's true. For the most part, if you're going to a con, you have some sort of, you know what I mean? Like, you're there to spend money, you know, to go to a con. So it's not like you don't have a life. And then I did laugh when he was like, it's a Friday. Those kids should be in school. But I've had a lot of friends from, like, when I go to Comic-Con, they're married, they have children. And it's so cool seeing them with their kids come to the con. Because it's like that really great moment that they all get to share. So that's kind of what I was thinking in that part. But yeah, mostly what I was thinking in that whole scene was like that poor girl who was just doing nothing and Hank caught her.
Yeah, just she was in the area. That was her only sin.
Also, how does Hank know that that's an alien's private part? Could it just been art?
It just looks like a flower to me.
Yeah, it didn't look like it. When Hank said it, that's when it starts looking like something different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like if you were just walking that painting, I would have just assumed like it was, you know, some modern art flower type thing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Bobby is rightfully mad at Hank and asks him to leave because having him around would keep people from wanting to go to his food truck. Back in the B plot, Min comes into Peggy's kitchen. She is furious at Khan for ruining and his venting, and Peggy's like, yes, channel that anger. We can use that for the poem. And, you know, she just talks about how Khan ruined her date and stuff. And then Peggy lets it slip by saying, yes, tell us how you felt when Khan walked into that fancy restaurant and ruined your date. And then Min's like, I never said anything about Khan walking into a fancy restaurant. And so then Min puts, you know, two and two together and realizes that Peggy spilled to Khan and ruined her date. And she's like, you know, this is the first time I've been with a nice man and you just ruined it. And, you know, you did this just for yourself. And Peggy's like, I just needed your anger because, you know, I've never been poorly adjusted before. And Min's like, well, if you ruin somebody's date just to win a poetry contest, I would say you're not well adjusted at all. And then she just storms out, which, yeah, Peggy, that's pretty low of you. You're ruining Min's good time simply because you want to get your poem in a book.
This is the hard. These are always the hard moments for me because I love Peggy. Peggy is one of my favorite characters. But then there are these times she does things like this where it's kind of like almost the unforgivable, like where Peggy's so selfish that she'll do anything to get herself ahead. And it's so hard to defend Peggy. Like, this was bad, you know? This was really a bad move on her part.
Like, Peggy's done a lot of bad things in the series. She's done a lot of, like, annoying things as well. But I would say on a moral level, we're neutral. But this is definitely one of the, I'd say, top 10, like, just malicious things she has done in the entire run of the show. We're back at the alley and Hank's talking to the guys about they probably would have just bought the food with alien money. And Dale gets about like, who told you about alien money? And then Bill, of all people, is the logical person here because Hank is going on and on about how weird it was. And Bill's like, I don't know. How is this any different than when we put on face paints and go cheer on the Cowboys? And then Hank's like, it is different. Bill's like, I don't know. I mean, when you go and put on a Troy Aikman jersey, how is that different? Somebody wanting to dress as their favorite character. And Hank's like trying to argue. And then he's like, but you see, dang it, Bill, stop trying to make sense. And then he's like, sorry. Bill makes an incredibly good point. And that really just talks about like how our society works and how we view different people. Because functionally, what is different than wearing your favorite sports person's jersey, painting your face to go to a bar to watch a game, or heck, just watching it at your house or even the stadium or anything like that? How is that functionally any different than dressing up like Chewbacca and going to a Star Wars convention?
Very true. Again, I just feel like it's that thing where it's like, I guess it is a different time or a different generation where it's like the people who love that sci-fi stuff back in the day were just like the awkward kids in school when Hank was growing up. Yeah. So it was. And then I guess, you know, back then it wasn't as mainstream as it is today. So on that note, as well. But yeah, again, this is kind of the other thing. Like when I talk about those moments where Peggy is just such a selfish person to get ahead, I love the moments where we get to see like how Bill was before everything. Remember like Bill as a star of football, like he wasn't the quarterback, was he?
I think he was, but I could be wrong.
What Bill was like one of the star football players though back in the day. And like in the when we saw like the flashbacks of him, he seemed like he had wisdom and he was what like he could be someone who could lead the group and then like something happened to him. You know what I mean? So every now and then when I get a like a nugget of Bill wisdom gold, I like love it.
Yeah, I agree. That is definitely, and there's been a few times like that where Bill was the voice of reason for the show, and this definitely was one of them. I can't remember the comedian. He was probably like not a big name, like Chris Rock or Nate Bargatze or whatever, but this comedian made a joke about how fantasy football is Dungeons and Dragons for people who used to beat up kids for playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Dude, there's so much math. Like I did fantasy football for one season. There is a lot that goes into it, you know, like I would say it's more intense than Dungeons and Dragons, because at least in Dungeons and Dragons you're a role play, like you're in it, you get to kind of, fantasy football is a lot of analyzing things and studying things and making predictions. Like I think that is more nerdy in a sense than D&D.
Yeah, I agree. Back in the B plot, Peggy gives a poem where she kind of is finally able to mix the negative and positive emotions she feels to talk about how she betrayed men's trust. And the poem went over very well. Everybody started clapping. And then Peggy's like, oh, please stop. And then they all stop. And she's like, no, actually clap for me. And then, of course, they start again.
I love that. She's like, stop. She's like, no, I didn't mean that.
Yeah. So to Hank's credit, he decides to take Bill's advice, or he took what Bill said to heart, and he starts watching that sci-fi show. At first, he's clearly not watching. You know, he has a very closed-off body position. He's leaned back. He has a grimace on his face. And then he really just starts getting into it. Like, he sees the scene where a guy is shot, and he, you know, kind of does the... I mean, they're talking in an alien language, so we don't know what they're exactly saying, but it's either like, I always love serving with you, or tell my wife I love her or something. And then Hank really starts like leaning forward and getting into it, and he really enjoys it. And then I love the Easter egg that when the show ends, it says it was created by Greg S. Judge, which has to be a reference to Greg Daniels, Mike Judge, and Saladin Patterson, the people who are behind King of the Hill.
Oh, that's a cool little Easter egg.
Yeah. And I think this is like reminiscent of a lot of things, because we have seen several episodes where there's something that Hank doesn't like at first, but then he finds something to like about it and he goes all in. Like, I always bring up The Sun Also Roses. He hates the ideas of roses, but then when he learns about the rose competition, he gets super into it. Or soccer. He always hated soccer, but then they had the whole episode last season where we see that Hank loves soccer. Hank returns to the convention and Bobby's upset because he's worried that Hank's gonna, you know, scare people off. And then Hank starts like alluding to the fact that, oh, you know, he's sorry for everything he did. And then that guy who stole the badge shows up, and then Hank's like, oh, I want to give you a peace offering. And the guy's like, well, what can you even offer that I'd be interested in? And Hank opens up this case that he has, and he must have spent all night making like an exact replica of the axe that was in that movie. And everybody's like, you know, amazed by how detailed it was, because Hank was able to put in like the special hieroglyphs and like recreate the burns from when it was shot by a blaster and stuff like that. Everybody is super happy. And he's like, well, you know, you can go and see this axe if you go to the robotic chain food truck. And the guy gives Hank the pass back, and they go back, and Hank's taking photos with the people with the axe while Bobby is giving away food, or not giving away, he's selling food. That would be a weird thing for him to give away food. At one point, Hank goes up. It's like, you know, they got the prequel showing and there's a midnight showing there. We can be the first ones to see it. And Bobby's like, You know what? I would love that, Dad. And then as he walks away, Bobby's like, nerd.
Okay, there's like a few things. One of the things that I thought was funny was when, first, shouldn't have Hank gotten the badge back like immediately? It was theft.
True.
Like at the end of the day, he stole from Hank. So why did he still have the badge? But I love when he gives Hank the badge back, he puts the badge back on Hank and then he starts chanting like, one of us, one of us. And Hank's like, I respectfully ask you to stop. I thought that was funny. But this is kind of like, this reminded me and my dad a little bit. My dad loves helping. Like whenever I do have a cosplay or something like I want to try to do, he's very into like making the prop for it. He's like, oh, we get to break out like the tools and stuff. So I can see how that was going to like really get Hank going. And Hank found this one thing. I love that Hank wants to go see the prequels. I'm worried about the prequels for this in-universe franchise, because if we've had any experience with the prequels for a good sci-fi franchise, they don't always end up well in the beginning, but they become loved towards the later years. But at that point, it reminded me of, like, remember the Ventriloquist episode where Bobby gets a dummy and then, like, Hank just kind of falls in love with the dummy more than Bobby?
Yep.
And then at the end, he makes a Bobby version of the dummy because, like, it's his love for his son. That's kind of the thing I felt at this episode. Like, Hank really loves Bobby that much that he's like, let me open myself up to this world.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that was mature of Hank. And it does show that he does stuff like that where he will open up his mind at the benefit of Bobby. And this was no different. And I absolutely love that. That was nice to see that. I also, when I saw this, the first thing I thought is, if I were to go to another comic book convention and like Hank existed in the real world, I'd absolutely want Hank to design my costume. You know, it would be the most amazing, accurate costume that possibly could exist.
Not just I feel like it's going to be quality work. Like Hank's prop is going to be almost screen use. You know, so I want Hank to make my keyblades.
Yes. You know, they would look almost exactly they would look exactly like the art in the game. Like, you know, he would have printed out like several different scenes and angles of the keyblade to get it perfectly right.
He must have, like, to get that axe with the hieroglyphs on there and then the bird mark, he must have rewatched. Or like, I don't think Hank is one to do research, like go to the internet and look. I think he just found scenes and paused and was like, okay.
You know, I think you're right. I don't really see him as a type to go and sit at the internet and like do a bunch of Google image searches or anything like that.
Yeah. Man. And also, Hank seems like a person who would like have all the material already to make that.
Oh, he had to, because it looked like it was nighttime when he was watching the show. Now, granted, maybe he turned off all the lights in the house just out of embarrassment or whatever, but it did kind of look like it was nighttime. So I doubt he would have had a ton of time to run to the hardware store, but I guarantee you he had wood lying around and scrap metal and stuff to pull this off.
I do want, like, a part of me wants to watch this movie. Like, do you think we'll ever get it? Do you think they'll release it? Can we, like, crowdfund it?
We should crowdfund it and see if Mike Judge, or I'm sorry, Greg S. Daniels will make the movie for us. But I do love how that ended, because I do like that Hank came around and then Hank showed that like he respected them. Because let's be honest, putting that much effort into making an exact replica and to show that he researched it and understood, like, I forget verbatim what he said because, you know, it's all made up words. But he was like, you know, they're like, oh, you got the actual Zarglian, you know, hieroglyphics on there. And he's like, actually, they're Pavlian or whatever, the predecessors or the ancestors of the Zargrians. And, you know, so just showing like how hardcore he got into it to make it super accurate, which shows how much he's trying to show respect for the people.
Yeah, I love just like he opened himself up and then he found out he enjoyed it a little bit more than he thought he was going to.
Yeah, so I do love how this turns around. We'll wrap up the Peggy story, and Peggy goes to Min's house to try to make peace. Peggy shows the Whisper book that she got published, but she gave Min a byline as well to show that she was published too. And Min is, you know, kind of happy, but she also wants more. And so Peggy apologizes, which she should have from the get-go. And then Min's like, I actually also want half of the prize. And I think like the prize was $40. So Min would only get 20. But then you hear Khan in the background saying, 10 of those will be mine. And then the episode ends. I'm glad Peggy apologized. I thought ultimately she would. But I'm glad that she actually did it and didn't just let that go, you know?
Yeah, you could have seen it where it was like, Peggy doesn't apologize at the end. Let's the, like, fanfare get to her. So I'm really glad that they redeemed Peggy at the end. And I'm really glad Min forgave her in her own way. Because, I mean, like, honestly, that was a really hard, like, to finally go on a first date after that, just to be, like, have it ruined. That would be rough to forgive someone, but I'm glad Min, I always feel like, is someone who can see, like, the brighter side. I think that sometimes, like, I know you don't underestimate Min, but I feel like sometimes people are like, she's not really a developed character or whatnot. But I think Min is very, like, she sees, like, more in people than just that. Like, remember when she joined the gun club? Mm-hmm. Like, she's more open-minded than we give her credit for. Because sometimes I think we lump her in with Khan.
I agree. I think she's a more developed character than Khan is, to be honest.
Yeah, she's definitely had, like, the few moments in past seasons that she's gotten her time to, like, kind of just show who she is as her own character. Definitely, like, makes you think, oh, there's more under there than that is. So, a Min episode would be really good, actually.
Yeah, there's just more to her character than Khan. Like, Khan, you could argue that Khan was flanderized over the years, but Khan's character is super easy. It's fun to watch, but it's super easy. Khan hates the people in his neighborhood. He's always trying to one-up everybody, and he's always trying to keep up with the Joneses. Like, his character is super straightforward. Min has a little bit of depth to her. Like, they don't use her as much as they use Khan, but there's a little bit more to her character when you start putting all those episodes together.
Very much.
Yeah, I thought this was a great episode. Or the B plot wasn't terrible. Like, it was fine. I just think the A plot of the episode just had way more going for it.
Yeah, that's the problem. This B plot wasn't a horrible B plot. It would have been fine in any other episode where it could have shared, like, something as equally as strong as it was. But the A plot was just too strong. It was too good of a storyline that, like, that, and that's the problem when the A one is really good and she, like, you didn't even want to share it with the B plot. Like, you were like, I could just do a full episode of this.
Yeah. Like, I'd watch a full 25 minutes of the A plot. I didn't need the B plot in this episode.
Like, I would have loved more seeing inside the convention or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, when I think about it now, does Hank need the badge back? I feel like he should just let the guy keep the badge. Like, Hank's not going to go back into the convention center.
That's true. He has no reason to, because everybody knows that the axe is at the
food truck. Yeah. So. And then Bobby can't go back in because he's going to be too busy with the food truck.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well give it to the guy who has a family.
Also, how did they get badges? I was just starting to think about that. Like, did he just steal a badge not needing it? Or did he just buy 3 badges for his wife and kids, but forgot to buy one for himself?
That's true. Okay, maybe he has a badge, but he wants the professional badge.
Yeah, maybe he really wanted the all-access badge.
Yeah, that's fine, though. My family will go in. Because he's, like, there in a costume at the beginning of the episode. Like, he's ready to go in.
Like, was he hoping that he could steal a badge off of somebody? Like, he just brought all of his stuff thinking, okay, all I need to do is steal a badge off of some chump and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's like, there's so many. I mean, of course, but that's what we do here, everyone, right? We overthink these episodes. So, yeah, exactly. What is he doing? But I would have just loved a, like, full episode of this. I would have loved to see Bobby and Hank go through the convention together at the end.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Now, granted, you don't need to see the convention because you've seen that convention center with sci-fi and comic stuff many times in the past. But it would have been fun to see more of, like, maybe how the King of the Hill universe would have presented it, I guess. At least figure out more about this sci-fi show.
That, or it would have been fun to see more, like Disney Easter eggs in there, like off-brand Marvel characters in there or something like that. Like, some, like, their universe is Wolverine just walking around.
Oh, if they saw the Silver Surfer and Hank's just like had a throwaway line of you look familiar, or didn't I sell you propane once or something like that?
That would have been great. Oh, you know what would be cool? If like Loki was there and then we're like, oh, this is tied into the MCU for sure. This is a branch timeline.
Oh, dude, that would have been funny if it were just like a really weird, like deep cut. A deep cut advertisement for like, if they like had an Easter egg in there for Doomsday, like gave away a plot point or something, but nobody realized it because it happened to be King of the Hill.
Oh my gosh. If I was Disney, I'd be doing that all the time. I'd just throw stupid. That would make everyone watch all your shows. If you did it one time, now people are like, whoa, now I got to watch every Disney thing in case.
I guarantee you on like December 18th, New Rock Stars and Screen Crush and all of those shows would have been pointing out that, you know, Dr. Doom was holding the Ultimate Nullifier in the background of season 15, episode 4 of King of the Hill. So, you know, Disney was already telling us what was going to happen.
That would be hilarious. I want that. I want that so bad.
Yeah, that would have been funny if they did that. Because it's all owned by Disney, so they technically could if they wanted to.
Yeah, Disney, we want the crossover. We want the big crossover.
Oh, man. But I love this episode. I mean, almost all the episodes of the new season are good. Or the new seasons, rather, are good. Because, you know, obviously we were worried. Revivals aren't always the best. King of the Hill is hitting it out of the park most of the time. There are some episodes, I will admit, are a little mid. But mid for King of the Hill is still really good, like when you compare it to other shows.
Very much so. Yeah, I think what has been really doing it for me this new season, this next gen of King of the Hill, is that every episode's been very heartwarming. Like it ends on a very like heartwarming kind of uplifting message and bringing the hills more together.
Agreed. I love this one. It's going to be a rewatch for me. I love that it took place in a building we've actually been at. For a very similar reason. Also, I remember ordering a sushi burrito from a food truck.
You ate a sushi burrito?
Yeah. There was I can't remember the name of the food truck. It might not even be in business anymore because this had to be like 2015.
Yeah.
But I remember having a sushi burrito there.
Huh. I probably got like a burger since I'm not into sushi. But I remember the food trucks. It was like a line of food trucks, just like this almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Those were the days, everyone.
Oh, cool. That's all I have for this episode. What about you?
Yep, just another great episode. This season's really killing it so far.
Also, if you guys want to relive this episode, go look up Dallas Fan Expo and get yourself a badge.
Or just wait outside and try to steal one.
Now steal one from a guy who looks like Hank, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.